I'm Macy Chan.
And I'm David Ball.
You're listening to CFRO, The Pulse, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
We are your independent daily news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
And we're streaming at thepulse.coopradio.org.
It is Monday, January the 4th. Good morning and Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021, our first show of the new year on The Pulse on CFRO. Today, we're very excited to have musician, artist, and activist Tanya Aganaba joining us to share some music and also to talk about the latest movements to defund the Vancouver Police Department, as well as to build alternative community safety models and their work with the Black Lives Matter Vancouver and the Defund 604 Network. Stay tuned for this exciting interview and their look ahead at the coming year. Without further ado, let's go straight to today's feature interview. Tanya, it's really an honor to have you on The Pulse on Co-op Radio with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here and also to kind of look back on the year past, I guess, a little bit. There's a lot that's happened, particularly when it comes to policing and discussions about racism that I think have really advanced the conversation, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, this year, 2020, has been on so many fronts, it's been absolutely wild. And, you know, watching global rebellion kind of unfold around the world, seeing people, you know, in the streets in the United States protesting the police killings that are happening, you know, constantly, daily, was wild. And watching people in our region kind of reckon with our own relationship with policing in response to that was incredible. And listening to, you know, all members of community, not just Black people, but all people kind of waking up to the reality that, you know, a future without policing is possible and a shift in priorities is not too much to ask. And witnessing that, you know, huge shift in people's perception around what safety means has been beautiful. It's accelerated the conversation in a way that is so wonderful. And I'm glad we're at where we're at. There's a long way to go, but it's a really, really good start.
It's really honestly hard to believe that massive Juneteenth rally down at Jackpool Plaza was actually more than 6 months ago. It feels like years ago and so present.
I'm telling you.
It's strange, right? It was huge and it was incredible because after all the COVID lockdowns, everyone was there with masks, everyone was careful, but it felt like something had to happen. There had to be a getting together.
Absolutely. And I'm so grateful to all of the different organizing groups who have come together and put together these kind of opportunities for people to gather, for people to learn, for people to share their grief and connect with each other. And I'm beyond grateful that no one got sick, no one was, you know, exposed to COVID at any of these events, because you just know people were waiting, just looking for that to happen so that they could, you know, attribute some kind of negativity to this movement. But I'm grateful that didn't happen. I really hope that all of these groups that came together and put together these, you know, these incredible events over the course of this summer will, you know, collaborate with each other and have conversations with each other and continue to build, because this is not a trend. This is not a trend.
When you say that, tell me more. You mean like in terms of a long-term commitment?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, like, it's really easy to get caught up in, what's the word? Like sloganeering, I guess, and not continue with the momentum. We have all this beautiful momentum, and I want so desperately for us to continue collaborating, continue having these conversations, continue supporting each other in these incredible ways that we have through COVID-19, and to continue these conversations in perpetuity, because like abolition, which is my goal, is it's a long-term goal and strategy. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's it's not one letter and then you're done. It's a long-term commitment.
One of the ways that this movement has really been expressed and has been kind of building links here in Vancouver is through the Defund the VPD movement. And I know that you're very connected to that. Were you surprised at City Council freezing the VPD budget? Did you think that was going to happen?
No, I didn't think that was going to happen. I was really surprised and really grateful to the councillors who I know have been putting in the work to connect with community and find out what we want to see happen, and to get our input before that decision was made. And, you know, I was really surprised that they were able to even do that, knowing how hamstrung they are by the different, levels of government and, you know, different bodies that actually control the purse strings. So I was really happy to see that motion passed. Do I think it's enough? Absolutely not. Do I think that, you know, a freeze is appropriate? No, I don't. Do I think that the police should be defunded significantly? Absolutely.
Last week on our program, we had on a former police officer, been critical of the police, but also kind of raised the issue that defunding the police has kind of gained this ideological association, and it's not about each individual officer. And I kind of wanted to put that to you because I had a few negative remarks from listeners saying, although it was calling on the police to be more anti-racist, it didn't really examine the VPD as an institution.
Yeah, I mean, if you zoom out and look at policing from a historical perspective, it's a racist institution. And there's no, in my mind anyway, there's no amount of anti-racist training or anti-bias training that can, you know, undo the roots of that system. It will take a fundamental, transformative, like, you know, shift in our idea of what safety means in order to really address the racism that is within the police. And unfortunately, I recognize and realize that that work, people are not willing to do that work in this moment. And anti-racism and anti-bias training seems like a good enough solution to most folks. But to me, that you can't train that history away. And history cannot be erased by, you know, a 3-hour workshop.
It also kind of, in my mind, kind of forgets this sort of, or glosses over this reality that so much anti-policing does, and the justice system does target poor people. And so people are swept up through suspicion by being poor. And it happens that, you know, marginalized, racialized, indigenous, black folks tend to be poor.
Yeah. I mean, marginalized folks that you just mentioned, poor people, black people, indigenous people, disabled people, mentally ill people, people that use drugs. These people are, one, extremely vulnerable to victimization, but they're also extremely vulnerable to being criminalized by the police. So to me, you know, pouring incredible amounts of funding and giving latitude to organizations that don't actually fix the root issues is, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think that that's a long-term strategy. I think we would be doing much better as a community and as a society if we shifted our priorities and poured our attention and our funds into dealing with the root causes of these issues. The police don't do that. They can't do that. They're not set up to do that. That's not their modus operandi. So, I understand that a lot of people are resistant to the idea of defunding the police, and I can understand that the language is triggering for many people, but I really encourage them to interrogate what it is inside them that's making them feel that way, and or find another way to look at this situation. For me, I have a 69 year old dad now, and to him, defunding the police is like a no-no. But when I sit down with him and I have a conversation, I try to explain to him that, like, we're just refunding the community everything that they've been robbed because we don't trust ourselves to govern ourselves. And if people can't connect with the idea that might be good for us, then that requires deeper interrogation. And I don't know, I can't help them with that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating way of putting it, refunding the community. Can you say a bit more about that, Tanya?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you look at the Vancouver city budget, 21% of that budget goes to the police. And the same amount of money goes to fund all community organizations, all community services, all responses to the community, which are drastically underfunded. They're not able to respond to the community. So to me, refunding the community means all of the money that we have said is not available to these community-led responses, to the organizations that don't function with the police, the civic society groups that don't have anything to do with the police, that typically would have responded to the community. Refunding them is, that's what I mean when I say refund the community. All of the money that should have been theirs, that we have systematically withheld from them, and, you know, with no care or concern, just given to the police, should be given back to the groups that need it the most.
And that particularly kind of intersects with the mental health crisis, the opioid crisis, the widespread feelings of distrust from communities that have been, you know, targeted by the police as well. People who, maybe even have called police hoping for help because there's no one else to call and they didn't come, or they came and arrested the wrong person.
This is a story that you hear all the time, where people reach out to the police thinking that that's going to be an adequate, response to the crisis that they're in, and what they're greeted with is either, you know, more violence or, you know, discrimination or criminalization or, you know, distrust or disbelief or, you know, just straight up violence. And that's, it's not surprising that people don't want to rely on the police. And it's not surprising that the people who support the police so vehemently are the ones who are never on the receiving end of the call. They are the ones who are making the calls. So the relationship between them and the police is one that's very different. And, I really think it's time for us to start thinking about the person who is on the end, receiving end of police services, and what kind of experience they're having. If you're just calling the police on the phone to report a crime, I'm sure that's going to, you know, be a stressful and negative experience. I know from my own experience reporting, harm that's been committed against me, my experience dealing with the police has been negative, but being on the receiving end of, you know, police showing up on your doorstep is very different. And, it's unfortunate that people can't put themselves in the other person's shoes and imagine what it might be like to, you know, have a cop show up on your doorstep with no warning.
Do you have any sort of strategic ideas or vision of if it's possible to work across these different perspectives on police? If the people who think that anti-racism training and freezing funding can work with people who are aiming for abolition, is there some way of moving forward on that without, you know, or are they too antithetical in positions?
Ooh, okay. So I believe that there is a place for everyone. We need people who are reformists. We need people who believe that, you know, training works. And we need people like me who believe that we deserve a future without police. There are opportunities for us to collaborate and for us to work together when our goals, intersect. But there are some things that we can't work together on. Like, for example, within the circles that I travel with, we wouldn't necessarily, encourage the police to all have body cams, because that's a major investment into very expensive tech for the police, whereas that money could actually go into the community. So there are some things that we, that are too the word you use is antithetical for us to agree upon, but there are some ways that we can organize together and push for the same goals.
And I guess there's, it's better to take one step than none, but then that's not...
Exactly.
Unless you pat yourself on the back and say, now we've done that, you know, we've got the body cams, so obviously there'll be no more bad officers.
You wish.
Once you're on camera, I guess it's all solved, right?
No way. And we know that's not true. We see that all the time. Body cameras don't solve anything. If anything, it just gives you unlimited footage of police brutalizing people, which is not good for anyone.
Right. And I remember when the courts released more footage from George Floyd's murder. And
yes,
it was just another whole round of traumatizing debate on communities, as people described it, that ended up just becoming politicized and polarized, just like the first video. So in the end, it didn't actually resolve the quote-unquote truth of the fact that this guy was killed. It did was cause people to become extremely traumatized.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. I think that we would be much better off to do the sensible thing, which is, okay, why are people engaging in quote-unquote criminal behavior? There are plenty of reasons for that. Maybe we can try addressing some of those factors, some of those determinants that exist in folks' lives that might help them not to engage in these kind of behaviors. You know, things like housing, things like safe supply, things like, you know, making sure that people have access to trauma-informed therapy. I know that these are, it seems a lot easier to just continue shifting the responsibility for these issues to the police to manage them, but the police are not qualified to do that.
I want to look forward to the coming year, 2021. Tanya, how are you, what kind of resources are you bringing from the last year into the new year that you're going to carry with you and to hold as a kind of strength going forward?
Yo, 2020 has been absolutely wild.
Bonkers.
One of the most bonkers. If you'd have told me, I would have told you were lying. And but
what happened to all the fortune tellers?
They have all disappeared, and they're like, "Whoops, my bad. I didn't see this one coming." but yeah, the things that I'm taking into 2021 with me. Well, one thing that has been really incredible for me during this period of time is being off the road and not traveling around as a touring musician, obviously, because that is a super spreading COVID type of activity. I have really been able to dig into getting to know what is happening in my own community, connecting with local groups that are doing incredible organizing work, having conversations with folks around issues that I've always been passionate about. But you know, when you're hustling all the time, you don't have the opportunity to really dig in and develop relationships in community. So what I'm taking into 2021 is relationships that were born out of, you know, sadness and, you know, anger and frustration and, you know, I've really found a beautiful side of our community that I'm really excited to move into this new year with and continue organizing with and continue, you know, just keeping a good eye on what's happening within our city and supporting those who are doing incredible work.
We aired a bit of the teach-in online that you hosted like just last week on our show and really appreciated the kind of attention to arts and bringing some positivity and kind of forward-looking discussions and a sort of sense of we're all here together. This is a thing to celebrate and be grateful for.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as difficult and as shocking to the system as a time as this has been, it's also been just such a beautiful opportunity to like strip away all the, you know, trappings, if you will, and really connect with people about how we feel and what we want and how we envision the future. Because one thing that everyone that I know is saying is that the past, where we're coming from, what 2019 was and before that, was not good enough. And where we want to go is somewhere far more beautiful, far more inclusive, far more quote unquote diverse. I hate that word, but far more, you know, a real community. And I think that, you know, if you're lucky enough to be someone like me, then, you know, COVID-19 has given you the opportunity to recognize what's truly important. And if it didn't give you that, then you're doing it wrong.
Thank you for sharing that, Tanya. It's powerful. Since we're lucky enough to have you on our show, kicking us into a new year, I'm wondering if there's a song you can let us play on our show and if you could introduce it for us.
Absolutely. I have an album that is called Something Comfortable, and
that's so good.
Yo. Okay. So Something Comfortable is all about me trying to make something that feels good for me, something that feels like home. And the song that I have chosen to share today is called Make This House a Home. And it's a song that I wrote with my husband about how hard it is to feel at home in a city like Vancouver, but how love, connection, community can really go a long way to making you feel like you have a sense of self and a sense of belonging. It wasn't until I fell in love with my husband that I found my forever home. I mean, it's a rental, so we don't know if it's forever.
It never is in Vancouver.
Yeah, but since I met him, I have finally understood what it means to be at home, and that has allowed me to do some deep digging into like what it means for me to be here in so-called Canada, what it means to be an immigrant, a Black person, queer, what it means to be, you know, residing here on stolen land, and how lucky I am to be here and how lucky I am to have a home, both metaphorical and physical.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I wish you so much of the best for 2021.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to chat with you. Stay connected to me.
Come back on here anytime.
I bet I will. All right, take care.
And that was Tanya Aganaba. You can find more of their music at tanyaaganaba.bandcamp.com. That's TonyaAganaba.bandcamp.com. They are an organizer with Black Lives Matter Vancouver, as well as the Defund 604 network.
To show you all. tethered floating towards the sky. Don't you say it, didn't regret it. I pray that you get it. Just wanna make this as a home, and that space that you occupied is wide open for you, and I'm hoping for a chance to show.
Tanya Aganaba with Make This House a Home from the album Something Comfortable. Happy New Year from all of us at The Pulse on CFRO and at Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
And that's our program for CFRO, The Pulse.
Your independent news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
Every weekday, 7 a.m. here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Find our previous podcasts and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.